wonderful show.
Sure.
Yeah,
we've got
this is great. Yeah.
From England.
We're all doing Rickman. Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were all starting off the show with Ed Sullivan impressions, guys. We are not that old. We are
not a one of us. No,
we are Earth's Mightiest Critics, and we are here tonight to talk about the number one movie in America
for one weekend.
Yep, we made it 1 week, sure. Right? Yeah.
Well, hey, it you know, there's some competition this week, maybe, but what is going to knock the marbles off of its $47 million throne? Could it be much. Trolls? I think that's Wish comes out next weekend. Oh, Thanksgiving is this weekend.
It's got to be the new Taika Waititi movie. I mean, that would be great.
Oh, right? Next Goal Wins, huh? I haven't seen it.
If that's not getting a lot of screens, though, because it's not showing anywhere around here. It's just like The Holdouts. Yeah. Everybody keeps talking about, what is it, The Holdouts or whatever? With
Holdovers.
Yeah. Thank you. With Paul Giamatti. Mm-hmm. That's not getting a lot of screens either. It's getting just enough for the Oscar run.
I think it might widen up because it's getting good reviews and good word of mouth. Yeah. And people want a Christmas movie that's not like cheesy or...
The Trolls is trying to do the same thing that Super Mario Brothers did when it came out, where it was released. This is being released just before Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving is a horror film, and the horror fans do come out, but you're talking a family movie that's not that long about trolls in an established musical, like, you know, franchise. If you, even though there were two, it's still, both those movies were very popular. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that Trolls will probably be it's going to rake in money, and it's going to rake in money for the next week.
Oh, yeah. It's got 2 weeks
until Napoleon comes out.
Yeah,
be a huge blockbuster.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Disney's Wish comes out next week, and
I want my 160 minutes back, Ridley.
Well, look, okay.
Wrong show. Right.
Here's the thing. First of all, thanks for the plug, Mark, because tomorrow you'll be able to listen or watch, Don and I talk about Trolls Band Together.
That's right.
Which we saw last weekend. But also, I think it's a perfect way to kick off a conversation, not talking about the movie, because this is the movie that nobody's talking about except to talk about how nobody showed up for it.
Yeah.
And the people who did show up for it are also the people who are being blamed for its failure at the box office. Very ironic.
Are we still talking about the Marvels?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
A movie that is being blamed on, you know, toxic white men not showing up for it when the demographics report came out, and it was like 61% of ticket holders fit that category. Very strange. Anyway, this is a sequel to a billion-dollar movie, and there are a number of theories, most of them having to do with it being sandwiched, Captain Marvel from 2018 being sandwiched between the two big Avengers movies, and you know, that's why people went to see it. I don't know how much of that's true, but there was something that resonated at least enough to get butts in seats for a while with the first Captain Marvel that did not happen here. So we're going to talk about the Marvels, because you know, I did not care for the movie. Gigantic surprise, I know, but we do have at least one ardent-ish defender of it on the panel. Yes, there you go, Don. I'm not sure exactly how David and Mark feel about it. I have some ideas about David's kind of take. I'm not sure exactly. Mark, did you actually go see it for a second time last night?
I saw it
in preparation
twice.
You saw it twice. Okay.
And you know what's funny is last night, well, it was the 4:40 show, to be fair. It was the 4:40 show on a Wednesday. So if you ever want to do a private viewing of a movie you might like, go to a 4:40 show on a Wednesday, literally the middle, the middle of the week. Yes, I went last night and it was actually nice. It was like a private showing. I was literally the only one in the theater, unfortunately. But it was okay because the first time I saw it, a gentleman who I know who is a really cool guy, don't get me wrong, but he is also rather vocal during a movie, and he was very excited. Oh. He really enjoyed the movie, and he was making some commentary during the movie under his breath, but still. So I went a second time, if anything, to make sure that I read the film with myself correctly, but also so I could have it in a little bit more peaceful setting. Wasn't expecting that peaceful, but you know, but one of the reasons I went to see it a second time. So
I'm going to put up the spoiler banner because I want to pick up on something that
Jump right
Mark
in.
Was just talking about.
Okay.
Now this is a fair warning for people who are watching this live or in the future or listening to the Kicking the Seat podcast, the audio version, because you can't see the spoiler banner crawling across the screen as you can right now. We're going to talk about something that happened at the very end in the mid-credit sequence, as they call it.
Oh, boy. Here it comes.
The post-credit sequence isn't really a sequence. It's audio of cats. Anyhow, yeah, well, that's like yeah. if nothing that, else, Marvel
not
knows
Andrew Lloyd Webber, that's earlier.
Yeah. Right, right.
The and it's a, and that is a, yeah, right. But also that's another the remake of Cats, which was discussed a few years ago. Much better film. Anyway, the mid-credit sequence of the Marvels. There were like two or three guys in the audience when I went to go see this movie, and they were about to reaching the peak, if you know what I'm saying. When the spoiler X-Men characters came out, it was very audible, like,
I didn't know Kelsey Grammer had that kind of, you know, pull with the young people.
I don't think there were young people.
Even then, how many pills they need to get?
Actually, there was a similar reaction. It not quite that much, but there was like this collective like gasp when they heard Kelsey Grammer's voice. And I'm just like,
wait, was this in the first or the second screen?
First, no. Oh, okay. Yeah. If there was a gasp on the second viewing, there's ghosts in that theater, which I appreciate.
When you saw it a second time, Mark, did you see it a second time because you forgot that you saw it the first time? Or
nope.
Okay, all right.
So, Mark, you are in full DC shill mode. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, David. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, when I was watching the end credit scene, I was sitting there going, okay, he's not in makeup here, so this must be totally CGI. And he's on a break from the new Frasier show.
Well,
you know, I don't know.
He's voice acting. Made the time, you know. Yeah.
We'll talk more about that mid credit scene, but I just it reminded me something.
I needed David's help after the scene, that's for sure.
Wow. Oh yeah, I went right to my phone I'm sure the people who were
called me.
He called you.
I would. Wow. You know,
yeah. Ian called me. He went right to his phone and called me.
Oh no! I just looked it up on the phone. Because there's Beast, and then there's also Maria Rambo, who's not really Maria Rambo. She is a character called Binary, who in the comics is an alternate version of Captain Marvel, which gets really confusing. And it's also a really terrible costume. And it's one of those
CW levels. Yeah. No offense.
It really is. And I'm like, what? It's a terrible way to introduce the X-Men.
She looked awkward in that.
Well, I have a theory on that, even though I'm the DC shill and you guys are Earth's Mightiest Critics and I'm Gleek.
We are Earth's Mightiest Critics. You're part of us, Mark.
I stuck at the back door. But no, what I will say is,
don't care. That does not matter on this show.
Did you say you stuck at the back door?
Some people pay extra for that kind of action.
Hey,
I think Kevin Smith referred to it as snowballing. Anyway, what do you got for us, Mark?
Poultrygeist did a whole song about tossing salad. Anyway, but
I love it. It's going great.
I think the mid-credit sequence is a part of the bigger picture of what has happened to Marvel, one, as it's trying to find its footing and try to strike lightning again and seems to be in chaotic disarray with no actual plan. I have a feeling the mid-credits sequence, where I was going with this, I apologize, was not supposed to be the X-Men in this one at first. Either the mid-credits or the end credits. I think it was supposed to be something with Kang. They're quietly
redirecting
attention away from Kang, and that was a bit evident in Loki, which I loved Loki, especially the end. I dug that whole series. I really enjoyed it. But if you look at that, if you look at the Marvels, and even you know some of their properties that they're promoting now, that was Kang. It just makes me wonder if whether or not the mid-credit sequence or the end-credit sequence, where we just get cats, you were supposed to have like a Thanos moment at the very end. So say, okay, the mid-credits, they always did plan X-Men. Okay, let's say they did plan that. The end-credit, I would say for sure, they probably were leaning more towards, hey, let's show a Kang Thanos type grabbing the glove or whatever the frack you want to do. They're in a flux right now, and this whole movie, You could see moments in here too that I have a feeling there's a lot on the cutting room floor that alluded to more.
There definitely is, yeah.
That is unfortunate that it had to suffer this, but it's because Disney's trying to separate itself and not necessarily focus so much on Kang anymore.
You know, over here, a shelf away in this basement that I'm dwelling in for this show, I have a rack of paint. And there's a corner over there that I see Marvel in surrounded by paint.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
They did this multiverse thing that I have well advertised on these airwaves. That this was always going to be a bad idea, and it still is. Great Spider-Man movie. You had a nice sequence in Doctor Strange 2, and the rest of this has been just wandering garbage. I'm sorry. You know, Ian, you took the right year off, man. I don't know how they recover from this other than backing. And now they've painted themselves in a multiverse corner, and your big bad that you were really banking on has, you know, ruined his standing in terms of being a viable talent or a viable hired actor, whatever you want to say about Jonathan Majors. So now they've painted themselves in two corners, if you could even do that. So I don't know what they're going to do, but it's going to be messy as they do it. I think our ultimate test of what the X-Men can be or will be or could be is whatever oddity comes out of Deadpool 3. Because when you bring in Hugh Jackman, you're either bringing it in for fun or you're bringing it in for serious. There's a good chance it's the former, not the latter. You know,
right.
I think they're there to blow shit up. You know, and say this is all done. Let's see what happens next. And that's going to
be a kitchen sink movie. So
I'm gonna disagree with you, Don. I don't think that has any bearing on the future of the X-Men franchise.
Mm-hmm. Deadpool 3 or Kelsey here.
Deadpool 3 and Kelsey Grammer here.
Okay.
Right. But Deadpool 3 specifically, because David, as you call it, is a kitchen sink movie. It's a follow up to the Deadpool movies, which has the occasional kind of like moment of darkness or you know, whatever. But it's an absurdist comic book fan, you know, as you say, let's blow shit up movie. Mm-hmm. And Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine, I think that's just meant for, you know, Deadpool to get on his nerves, and he probably gets sliced up a whole bunch during the movie and, you know, reconfigures himself or whatever. I hope it's a zany buddy movie, but my enthusiasm for it is waning by the day, because Marvel, I think, announced recently that due to many factors, their slate of releases went from three films in 2024 to one.
To one.
Yeah.
Yeah. One. So who knows what the future and you've got DC coming out in 2025.
Yep.
You know, relaunching it with James Gunn's Man of Steel. So honestly, I think the landscape for the comic book movie in the next 2 years is going to dry up, and then they're going to try and, you know, get some desert flowers out of this thing. But I think the ground is going to be cracked.
Yeah.
You know, beyond saving. And I don't know if the audience is going to be there. My problem with Kelsey Grammer is it's, you know, it's member berries, it's all this stuff, but it's also we're going back to an actor who's played Beast before. This new X-Men should be a new vision of the X-Men, not recycling. Yeah. I don't want to see Hugh Jackman back as Wolverine if this is going to be a continuity. I don't want to see Kelsey Grammer or hear him or whatever. It needs to be a new vision, because otherwise you're just, hey, gang, in 2025, you remember this actor from 25 years ago that was playing this part?
That's why I think Deadpool 3, that's why I call it the Wrecking Ball movie, and why you call it the Kitchen Sink movie. I think it's there to blow, that's your chance to, in an absurdist way, blow up the multiverse and bury the X-Men to start a new one. I'm hoping for that, but boy, that's asking a lot.
That's asking an awful lot. And if you look, you've got your streaming content, which they're trying to keep subscribers on, so they're going to be dumping content there. You've got the What If trailer, which really didn't spark me much at all. You've got their Marvel, the MCU studio adjacent, which is Sony, with Madam Web getting all kinds of hate online right now.
And for good reason. That trailer,
looks like a CW show. I know, because DC has done CW shows for like 15 years. That looks like a CW show. It almost looks like a CW, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but as far as for a wide movie, and the fact that you're not going to be getting many comic book movies, if this was wedged during a, like, 5 years ago, if this was 5 years ago during its hate, the comic book movie, like kind of peak of sorts,
yeah. Avengers,
it yeah. probably would be looked at a little bit more. And I think that's where, Captain Marvel also ends up getting hurt, and is where it's at in the comic book movie landscape as well. All the comic book properties, Loki is in all honesty, a fluke rather than the standard. It's an anomaly.
Yeah.
But what helped make Loki was that if you look at it, even though the story is epic, it's actually a small contained story with just a small number of regular characters. If you look at the way Loki season 3 played out, you don't actually have a huge cast of characters or a huge story. You're still following kind of a pretty straightforward story with that. It's all about the Loki arc. So that benefits from there, and Tom Hiddleston and the cast they have is just wonderful. But
well, I think you bring up a good point, because that is a Disney Plus TV show, mm-hmm. but increasingly nobody is watching these Marvel Disney Plus right. TV shows. No yeah. one showed up for Secret Invasion. Miss mm-hmm. Marvel had like historically bad ratings. They even tried to yeah. dump it on ABC, you know, during the, yeah. all the striking business mm-hmm. and no one showed up for it there either. If WandaVision, that was kind of like the first like real out of the gate, and people watched it as a fascination. But then by the mm-hmm. time the end of it, there was like, what's going on here? Yeah. What does it have to do with the wider Marvel universe? I have not watched Loki season 2.
I haven't either. Because I got to catch up.
I honestly, I'm not going to. I mean, because I know you love it, Mark, but it's kind of like at the end of Loki season 1, I'm like, okay, so this is leading into Kang, which is supposed to right. tie into the movies. And like, mm-hmm. okay, so Kang, a version of him, got defeated in the end of Loki, but now he's the big bad who's waiting out there. And we yeah. get Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. And he gets defeated again.
Yeah.
But I'm still being told he's the big bad for the next, mm-hmm. 5-6 movies. And I'm like, I don't believe it. And I don't want to go back and see more about this character. I'm done.
Yeah.
But that brings us to, finally, the Marvels.
Right.
17 minutes in, guys.
Oh, boy.
First of all, I just want to point out something before I forget. You can kind of see it in between us here, but it's the teaser image that I put out mm-hmm. on Twitter and X for this episode. Brie Larson, the close-up with that star triangle behind her head. Mm-hmm. Jeff York, our co-critic, pointed out, doesn't that look like a dunce cap? And I think it kind of does.
Oh, harsh.
Well, did you see that poster where she's in the middle and then Samuel Jackson's in full body and it looks like she's wearing his legs and it's awful.
They have terrible luck with posters. If you look at the early Marvel teaser poster with three ladies in position, it looks yeah. like they are glowing parts of the female anatomy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Glowing shapes, everybody. They just need to stop making advertising for this movie. And fortunately they will be able to after this movie this weekend, because throwing bad money after good. Or something, good man after bad.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this, Mark. Just high level, as the DC shill, you saw this movie twice. What did you think of it? Did you want to see it again because you liked it, or because you were doing your homework? Was it so forgettable that you had to see it again so you could talk about it? I don't mean to shade your view, but what did you think?
Well, I'd like to welcome all my Marvel fans to the comic book support group, the comic book movie support group. Yeah. I appreciate all of you. Now, I know some of you are newer here. Some of our Marvel fans are newer here, but it's okay. We have plenty of DC fans to help you through this rough period of time when you have movies that are Marvel films that aren't really making it at the box office. It's okay. It's okay. We're here.
It's been a while.
Help.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I dug it. Almost every movie that the MCU fan base has gone, I've dug for the most part. And I loved this movie. Now, it's not to say there aren't warts in it, but I adored this film. I had a lot of fun with it. I went into it. I laughed just as hard the second time as I did the first time. I enjoyed the energy of it quite a bit. I think there's a lot here to enjoy. There's also, though, I think a lot that is not the movie's fault itself. It is what ended up happening, especially knowing some of the story of how they continually trimmed this and trimmed. And that's where I'm at with it. And maybe it's because I have a very overactive imagination, a very overactive. And I have very patient friends, including Earth's Mightiest Critics here, who deal with that. And I appreciate that. And maybe my head was filling in some of the gaps. This film really had me. And the only reason why I didn't give it a full five stubs was because of the ending. Because the ending is hacked. You can tell the ending especially is hacked up a bit, because there are some serious continuity errors in the ending.
In the third act,
pretty much. When
the main story ending, or we're getting a team together ending?
No, not the main story ending, not the Young Avengers moment, which is what they're leaning to. Spoiler. But that's what I predict. I don't know. I'm a DC guy. I don't know Marvel. I just figured that's where they were going with it. But I enjoy this quite a bit. And maybe it's just because I went in there and, being a DC shill, I'm not exactly tied. I still have not been fully tied to the MCU films. But I go in just for a film to look to be entertained. And I was entertained. And part of that, though, is because the weaknesses in this film are the weaknesses many of the MCU films have. You have a villain that's underdeveloped. Everybody loves Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 1, 2, and 3. That first one, they have a villain that is completely underdeveloped. The only reason Loki is more developed is because he got Tom Hiddleston in a character, and he's not really a villain. They put him in a gray area. But if you look at all the other villains, they're pretty much as, except for Thanos. Okay, I don't want MCU to really set me on fire later when I leave the studio. But no, a lot of the villains have been one note in MCU. Mm-hmm. Okay, they've been no more one note than this villain. All right, I'm going to say that. So I guess for me going into it, I really enjoyed it because I love Imani. I love the Ms. Marvel series. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. The two series that I loved last year were on opposite ends of the morality spectrum. I loved Ms. Marvel and I loved The Boys. Those are my two favorite comic book properties that came out last year that I loved, both of them. I love her energy and she really helps quite a bit in the entertainment that I had with this movie. I like the spirit of this movie. I like what they were trying to go for with this film quite a bit. And like I said, maybe my head was just filling in some of the blanks, but I had fun. I came out of this entertained and I had fun. I was not bored. I enjoyed it. And for me, if you entertain me, then some of the flaws and stuff I will overlook, even though I recognize them. And maybe that's why I don't consider myself a critic, is because I go in and if you entertain me, if I come out and feel like I got my popcorn money worth, all right, I'm good. That's at least worth going to go see. Again, there's warts. I've seen the warts, but there's no more warts than what we've had in even in its heyday, MCU heyday.
No. Mark, I got to call you out. This movie is by far...
It's tied for worst,
I think, with Captain Marvel, but it is indicative of a lot of the phase four problems. But to say that this is there's comparison between this and any of the other, like the heyday MCU movies. No. I'll just say like the whole thing with the villain, it's not an excuse. I mean, you can't just say, well, this movie is going to have a terrible villain. If Marvel's listening to the fans, like, how do you go to a movie that's like the 33rd and in the series, and arguably it's been about probably 12 movies now since they've had like a real villain worth a damn, and just say, oh yeah, this is fine, I'll give this my time and attention for an hour and 45 minutes and not be pissed off that they still haven't given me what I deserve, which is a well-written, well-performed character. We'll get into all of this, but David, I want to go to you. What did you think of the Marvels?
So I posted my review today, and I feel like...
I got to check that out.
Yeah.
I feel like... So I felt like the viewing experience was fun, but the intended experience was for it to be funny, and it wasn't funny. Like, not totally funny. I'm just saying, like, there was definitely elements that... those involved in making the movie, they wanted it to be funny moments. to me, they were fun, but not funny. And for me to observe that and recognize that while I'm watching the movie kind of pulls me out, because I'm like, okay, you know, this is fun, but it's not funny. And there, you could obviously tell that they're trying to be funny, but it's not, you know. Floating cats with a space station malfunction, you know, with Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's better than the needle drop of No Doubt, you know, I'm Just a Girl, but I mean, not by much, folks. You know, it's like, it's like you're taking a song that most people loathe, and you couldn't come up with any type of deep cut about cats or something. I don't know. I even appreciate the ambition of a musical number in the movie like this, you know, mix it up. I mean, they've had, you know, dance offs in Marvel movies. They've had other, you know, they've had, you know, they had Baron Zemo dancing, you know, it's like, you know, that's not too unheard of, but this movie just seemed like it was in a rush to go somewhere. And I don't know where. It was in a rush to get released, I guess, you know, because it's just like, there's too much, not even too much going on, but it's just like, there's not enough for us to really like register and invest. And you could tell that there's some things lost. Like, okay, why in the world would Nick Fury bring the Khan family up to a space station? Why?
Because he's no longer Nick Fury.
Well, that's what's funny too, is if you watch Secret Invasion, if you're one of the few that did watch it, that was like an old, dragged out, tired Nick Fury. And here it's just a Samuel Jackson dialing it in for comic relief. Like he's struggling with Wi-Fi issues on the space station at the end. And, you know, it's like, and basically the whole plot of the villain is the same thing that Dark Helmet had in Spaceballs, to basically just suck the natural resources of planets to replenish his own. That's what Zowie Ashton's Dar Ben is doing. And I was like, what? You know, and it's like,
what? No. Her other motivation was to destroy the male gaze. Zowie Ashton is, you know, an attractive woman.
And
that's
she's
fine.
Tom Hiddleston's baby mama. So.
Right. Yeah. But there, I don't know what they were doing in this movie. In the flashback to when she was on the Kree world, when Captain Marvel blew up her planet or whatever, you know, she looked like a regular person, and through whatever, they made her look like a sub Ricardo Montalban con ripoff
again
throughout the main film.
Again,
also talking about like editing problems, real quick. That's one thing I noticed, because this movie did not have my attention except to like spot its flaws. I don't know if she was pregnant during this production or what, but did you notice like the fluctuations in the way her face changed throughout the movie? She was like heavier, and like her jawline kept reappearing and disappearing like every other scene. It was very bizarre.
I just noticed her like snarling a lot.
Through those weird silver like gum teeth or whatever the hell was going on in her mouth. I don't know.
Kind of glowing eyes thing. But you know, like you mentioned her backstory. I mean, wait a minute. That's an interesting thing. Show more of that so we have a more motivated villain. Like you screwed up the Kree homeworld, Annihilator, aka Captain Marvel, aka Carol Danvers. And that's why I'm ticked off, you know, and Dar Ben, the villain, you know, it's like, but no, it's just a lot of, you know, preening. And, you know, it's like in the beginning of the movie, it's so funny because it was just like Thor Love and Thunder. Thor Love and Thunder opens up with gore. This one opens up with Dar Ben. You're introducing, both movies are introducing brand new villains. And I mean, if we were to compare intros to both movies, I mean, Christian Bale wins, but like both of them are introducing villains. At least in Thor Love and Thunder, you're showing some motivation, right? Okay. Yeah. He's mad at the gods. Okay, cool. This one, she's out looking for some quantum jewelry. Bands and what? We don't know.
It's Eric Bana's motivation from J.J. Abrams' Star Trek 09.
Yeah.
All over again.
I felt like she was on the floating moon that Nuclear Man was on from Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
Breathing and talking really easy, yeah.
If that sarcophagus they dug up that the bangle was in, if Nuclear Man popped out of that, instant 17-star movie.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, but okay, so we'll come back to some of those specifics. So, but
I had mild fun with it, but I should have had more.
I agree. Now, before we get to your opinion, we have a comment.
Sure. No, go ahead.
From your people.
Yeah,
wait a second. Where'd it go?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Vito.
Hey, Vito.
Hey, Vito.
Vito, my pizza's late.
Yeah. Hey. Vito did some good takes on this. So check out his channel. He goes by Vito Professional Idiot, which is a lot of fun.
I resemble that.
Sold.
Yes. Okay. Don, what did you think? Okay. Now you and Mark are in the same, like, this was a lot of fun camp. And not camp, but in the same group, I guess.
No, I'm a 3 out of 5 guy. So I mean, you know, if we're playing the school teacher, that's a C, you know, C or C plus or C minus or solid C. I had fun. I am one of those, I think the few people on this panel who enjoyed the first Captain Marvel immensely. I really just appreciate the girl power hero that's there, because a nice strong female character depiction of woman. I like that she I like that Brie Larson is the best Hal Jordan we never got over in DC. Like, that's ass kicker. I mean, seriously, that's an ass kicker girl who is ready to be a hero, wants to be a hero, and can be a hero, and just doesn't take any shit because she's a fighter pilot. She's had to bite, scratch, and claw for everything she's had to do, and she's not the reluctant hero we've seen from every other goddamn iteration of most superhero origin stories of I'm not sure what to do. And about the only thing holding her back is the inhibitor chip that the Kree put in. Other than that, that girl's ready to go. And I like that. I think somewhere on your team, on your squad, so to speak, you need someone who's going to take a headbutt from Thanos and look him right in the eye and say, headbutt me again. I like that she's an ass kicker. I like that she's a female equivalent, if you want, to Thor without the jokes. I like that she's serious and ready to go. I think, and that's with me being a do-gooder and appreciator of what Brie Larson can do, to be able to have more heroes alongside of her to kind of soften her a little, humanize her a little better than she was before, and to give more attention to more great characters that are inspiring enough to really look up to and enjoy. I liked having Tiana Paris, and I like having Imani Vellini in here, where Miss Marvel was a joy to watch last summer on the show, where street level, you know, something we all talk about and dream about. You got a street level hero doing unique little things, a girl growing into what she can do with great potential, and of course screen presence for days. And then Tiana Paris is just another one of those living up kind of to that higher, faster, farther person, you know, someone who's got some purpose, got some initiative to herself. Also not a person who's just going to wait around and be a damsel in distress. And I like that. So you give me 3 of those in a movie and you give them something reasonably decent to kind of do with each other, or kind of a quest to go on. Is it Spaceballs? Yeah. Is it Marvel's unfortunately uncorrected spelling mistakes of being able to, you know, get better villains with better backstories? Yeah, it's still that. I like Mark, I recognize the warts where the villain is not very good. The plot is not, or the plot as in the plot of, you know, the nefarious plot part isn't the best, but I really enjoy just the positive female message. I like the stoicism. It's as an MC movie in terms of lightness compared to some of the morose post endgame grief sessions we've had for the better part of 2-3 years now. This is a movie I could show to my 10-year-old and 9-year-old as a Marvel entry, and they would have fun. The Flurkins and the cats are, it's ridiculous, yes, but gosh, it's fun. Is Nick Fury kind of, or is Samuel Jackson kind of mailing it in? A little, but he still had a little more pep in his step here than in Secret Invasion, but that's also asking Nick Fury to be deadly serious. So I don't know. I was able to kind of take my little rubric, so to speak, as a teacher, and just kind of dial in terms of where I was grading and kind of be like, all right, if we're just here to have some fun and elevate a few characters to a good place, that's enough for me. I don't need this thing to solve the MCU. I don't need it to solve the world. I don't need it to break a whole lot of new ground other than on the hero side. Are there missed opportunities where you can get to a few other things? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I'm laughing when they're trying to sing on the sea planet. I'm laughing when the Flurkins are eating the crew as an evacuation thing. It's ridiculous and stupid, but I'm having fun, and I can show it to my kids and my students at school. And I don't want to keep doing the target demographic thing that Ian and I have done for a couple of shows in a row here, but I just had fun, and that's good enough for me.
3 out of 5. First Captain Marvel movie's 4, because I think there's bigger messages there that are super well supported and well presented. But I can't put this as a 2 where it's complete. Like the humor, the humor is really ugly with some of the cat stuff if you're not into that. But it's not Thor: Love and Thunder where it just jokifies everything, or as Doctor Strange where it just tonally messes between horror and comedy and doesn't reach it either. So yeah, 3 out of 5. I'm not here to shake the hugest flag in the world, but yeah,
I think it was a couple of years ago. We were talking about like what was going on in the Marvel Universe. It might have even been at the beginning of Phase 4. I can't remember. Yeah. Possibly, maybe it was to do with WandaVision. Possibly
before your
hiatus. Hiatus.
Yeah.
Before your hiatus.
Hiatus. What?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, we are talking about Captain. I almost said Captain Marvel 2. That's what it's called in China, by the way. So we were talking about how those shows were so different. And now that Disney is like exploring stuff on TV, they could actually branch out and do different kinds of shows. What if there was a rom-com? What if there was a yada, yada, yada? Mm-hmm. The problem is, I think, because there was no direction with Phase 4, it's also messy. They can't afford to take those swings and misses.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to the motion pictures, the Marvels belongs on Disney Plus. It does not belong as part of the MCU. Because we go to those films. This is not
the TV and the
all movies. Of it.
Okay, no, yeah. The Marvel Cinematic Universe. I know MCU is kind of the all-encompassing term, but okay. I'm saying if you're looking at those stories from Iron Man all the way up through the Marvels, there is a continuity and an expectation. And I didn't see Thor and Love and Thunder because I'd heard a lot of stuff about because it was on my hiatus from comic book movies. I had heard, oh, it's a silly romp. I'm like, I love Taika Waititi, but you know, Thor Ragnarok, I thought was a great, it was an awesome movie, but it was just, and he was directing from someone else's script. It got a little bit silly, but it still had that kind of gravitas. But then I'm like, but you're pushing it, Taika. Like this stuff shouldn't be like, no, I'm not going to.
Okay.
Because I take for many reasons, I take these movies seriously as sort of a modern like comics mythology,
right.
Put the screen. So when I look at this, like this isn't really a sequel to Captain Marvel. They are tonally two completely different movies. Mm-hmm. I think buoyed by the fact that, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, I'm going to disagree. We don't have to get into the entire thing, but I think she's an awful character. I think she is a creation. She is a strong female character in name only. I think she's, weak in terms of her motivation. I think the ass kicking thing is just this trend of like people in Hollywood think that making a female character strong is basically turning into a man with boobs. And that's not how it works. She doesn't stand. If you compare her to the male Marvel characters and she's bringing that kind of masculine energy, it's all shortcuts in terms of her development. There isn't really any in this movie she's, I think they included Miss Marvel and is it Photon? Yeah, I think Photon is Zona Parrish's character's name, although that's the running gag in the movie that again they don't resolve at all. Nah. There's like, hey, what's your character name going to be? They bring this back like 6 or 8 times during the movie. And they don't even give us a punchline. I'm sitting there saying, someone just call her Photon so we can move past this. But they never do. Mm. But they had to add these two supporting characters to kind of put some spark and some life into Captain Marvel. And that's kind of a problem. I like Iman Vellani as an actress from what I've seen in interviews. I didn't watch Miss Marvel again. I'm not going to.
Oh, I thought this cute. You'd like that one.
Here's the thing. My wife and I both, because she was kind of curious, we saw the Marvels together and we were both like, we had heard good things about, Miss Marvel. So let's see what this character's all about. And, the actress is charismatic. But as written in this movie, I don't know if the show is indicative of it, but this is kind of has to be an advertisement for the previous source material because all we get is like this real weird animated flashback to who she is. I don't want to spend more time with this character. She's supposed to be 16. She acts like she's 12. And this whole fangirl thing, like half of her dialogue in this movie is screaming, oh, my God, and flying and flailing about. I'm too old for this shit. Like I'm of the school of Captain America, Civil War, Winter Soldier, Iron Man, all this stuff. Trying to make this into a girl brand just doesn't cut it. I know, oh, but you know, it's guys too. Yes, guys showed up for the movie, women did not. I think you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole with this type of movie.
Some 16-year-olds aren't that mature, okay?
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly. That's fine, but you can choose who you're going to focus on. If Peter Parker acted like Miss Marvel did, he would not have gotten his own franchise.
But he's not. I mean, that's a different character.
He freaks out in Homecoming all the fucking time.
He does.
Yeah.
Complete no, teeny bobber. Not to that extent. He's got more. Well,
she's a fangirl from Jersey City.
Okay, man. Let's talk about the fandom, okay? Sure. How does she know anything about Miss Marvel?
Well, that's
secret character.
Ant Man being in a book.
It is a secret character. She showed up in the 90s. Her exploits were not known to the wider world. And then she fucked off to the universe to play Green Lantern.
She comes
back in Endgame to fight Thanos in a fight that was not televised. Why are there Carol Danvers lunchboxes and posters and all this stuff? Yeah. She does not have the name brand recognition of Iron Man. There is no way this Jersey girl knows who Captain Marvel is.
You want it all spelt out for you on screen of why.
No, I just want it to make sense. You can't have a character who shows up on Earth twice, really once that we know about, and then
we should know at least three times because you have a flashback to where she shows up to where she visits Rambo before she blipped.
Right.
But there is no point
in the story where she shows up to visit Maria Rambo. And by the way, she goes on this press tour.
That's a Joss Whedon fast forward moment if there ever was one. It is. Like the way we jump into Age of Ultron, like, and we're done with Baron Von Strucker, whatever.
I will push back in the fact of we're not seeing everything in the universe of how it's played out. So, yes, you're right. You're right. She's only showed up on twice, as far as we know, on screen. But we also know that she shows up and there's reports that there's many witnesses of the epic battle on Thanos.
Where were those witnesses?
Every single superhero and minor person, they had people who worked in the temples showing up. You don't think they went to their family and went, holy crap, you see Miss Marvel? And we don't know if there were other adventures in between.
Right.
If we start going by only what we're seeing on screen, okay.
Well, no, we do, because after Endgame, she disappeared again.
Not completely. She's out. She's been looking for, she's been out in the middle
in
of nowhere.
Deep.
And she's been
space.
Coming back. But when? they've also established
that she keeps coming back and is part of any kind
but
of
do we,
team
do we
or
need
public.
That handholding?
No.
Do we need that handholding?
It's kind of like saying Nick Fury belongs in a lunchbox just as much as Carol Danvers. They're both covert characters in this universe that, yes, the superheroes know about, but they're not, putting her in lunchboxes and making big marketing pushes. It doesn't make any damn sense. On top of that, there is no arc for that relationship in the movie. There was a moment that showed potential when they were on the planet where all the oxygen was being sucked up and Miss Marvel, not acting very heroically, said, you can't save everybody. We're going to save ourselves and leave the planet. And they take off as everybody dies. And then there's one look that Miss Marvel gives to Captain Marvel. She's like, what the fuck? Now, later on, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry I snapped at you or something like that. And everything's fine. That should have been the opening to the main story of the rest of the film, which is never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
And, let's Miss Marvel teach Captain Marvel how to be an actual hero instead of just a stone cold space cop, because that's what she needs. It's a completely different movie, but it's also the plot of an actual movie.
Yeah, and so his Civil War should have not been about a bromance about Captain America. It should have actually been about the Wachovia Accords. But it absolutely was.
But that movie accomplished everything that it needed to accomplish by splitting up the team ahead of the great threat that needed a united superhero presence. Now, the follow-up movies did not live up to that promise, because by the next film, they're like, oh, Cap, it's fine. And, we kind of had some bad blood, but whatever. But the promise of Captain America Civil War was there through and through, from beginning to end.
if you say so. I didn't like the whole bromance angle in the third act of how it boils down to, oh, hey, by the way, Winter Soldier killed Iron Man's parents. I'm like, really, that's what it's boiling down to? You don't get a moment of people actually revealing their identities that you got in the comics. Mm-hmm. You don't get an assassination attempt on Captain America, which I think would have been huge.
There's a difference between not adapting the Civil War comic, which if you were going to do would have to be a TV series or a six film arc, which was not in their plan, and taking the concept of doing the heroes being divided and putting it into, I think, a really strong film made for thinking adults.
That's Marvel making Zack Snyder level mistakes. Then don't bring Civil War into it. Find another way to split up Tony and
Ben. Well, if they had not called it Civil War, I think it was simply a matter of branding. If they had called it anything else, then I don't think we'd be having this conversation.
To a crowd like this, Mark included, all that's like, once you invoke the name Civil War, there are larger expectations when you do that. And
well, on top of that, Mark is talking about it. Yes, but what you're talking about, Don, is larger expectations among comic book readers. And comic book readers do make up a good portion of the audience, but they are a very small percentage of the overall audience who goes to see these movies. So when they see Captain America: Civil War, they're probably thinking, ooh, they adapted this story into a comic book. Let me go read it rather than,
is this what happened in 1860s?
They took a comic book. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. There you go.
I have those things.
Racial prejudice. I don't know. Let's see.
No, the tricky thing is, the tricky thing with some of this is, in terms of tone, it's the choose your own adventure thing. Like, you want something, Ian, you want something that's very serious or at least seriously minded. And maybe they're just not going there. And not that it has to, and again, there's degrees in which that's going to happen, whether you're Taiki Waititi throwing every joke against the wall, or you're doing this movie where you're leaning to lighter fare. I don't know. I think there's more room for movies like this than there is for the Love and Thunder stuff. And then when you have to get completely morose, which we've had enough of for a phase and a half. So it's tough. This is a tonal mismatch, T-O-N-A-L, mismatch to other things that have come down this pike. But I don't know. It's welcome. This is refreshing compared to the dark shit on the DC side and the aimless, morose stuff that's been filling the Marvel side. Like, I was happy this one showed up. So I don't know. Yeah.
I'd be curious to
see. I'm with Mark on this
one. Well, I'd be curious to see what is left on the cutting room floor, because this is an hour 45.
Fair question.
It's the shortest of the Marvel films. There's talk that there was originally, a much longer cut. I'd be curious to read that screenplay, but I don't want to watch the movie because I can get through a screenplay in much less time without my eyes and ears bleeding. But, I just wonder if they answer some of these questions. And now here's the problem is I don't even know some of my problems with the film. I don't think can even be taken down to editing, but just weird holes, like the whole Kree refugee thing or the Skrull refugee thing, which is still going on. When they're getting ready to evacuate the planet, the one Skrull guy says to Carol Danvers, but where will we go? It's the Thanos problem. You can go anywhere in the universe. It's not like, because Thanos was like, I'm going to snap out half the life in the universe because I'm afraid of like resource deficits. Like, I'm sorry, what? It's a cool idea until you think about it for more than 10 seconds, but
that's a repeated issue, because Secret Invasion was a continuation of that, where the Skrulls have had nowhere to go for a bit here. So
I understand that, but Carol Danvers has been wrestling with this she destroyed that Kree homeworld decades ago, and there's a line or two in the movie about like, well, I've been off trying to figure this situation out, when through the events of the movie it's clear that she hasn't even been back there. On top of that, she's got the power to reignite the sun, an idea which Monica has to tell her about 30 years after this, issue happened when the sun burned out. On top of that, I don't know how destroying the AI that has controlled a civilization for 100 years, it causes civil war and also causes the sun to die out. There's so many weird problems in here, when it's like, I would throw the first thing to go is that singing planet. in service of answering these questions. Because look, you've got it's Disney, which you've got an entire stable of people whose careers and the entire brand, you could say, was built on musicals, and you can't come up with a compelling song, an interesting choreography. The bad guys show up and interrupt, you know, them trying to get information to this plan or whatever. Have a fight, have a dance off. Like if this entire race is based on song, what would their fighting style be like? Instead of like, oh my God, people are, you know, attacking us, let's run. You know, there's
this DDR moves. DDR moves.
Well, Dance Revolution. Oh, I thought you said TDR. I'm like, rises. There's a K in there. No.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's funny is that most people will blame that dance sequence because it's Disney.
The thing is, like, if you're going to do something with it, don't just, it's not enough just to say, it's like the people who wrote this movie saw the Guardians movies and like, oh, all you have to do is like say something random and it's instantly funny and cool, instead of like, oh, it's a planet where they sing and dance a lot. Okay.
And you know, since you mentioned that, we haven't even mentioned the director, Nia DaCosta, who is the co-writer along with a couple of other writers, female writers who wrote Loki and WandaVision.
Yeah, that's the team.
So,
I don't mind the spine of it that's written by the three women. I do have Ian's questions on what's on that cutting room floor. There's probably something
richer there. That's where I'm at. And in all honesty, at least that dance sequence has got more choreography to it, that they trimmed it. Because if you look at the trailer, there's about a half a dozen scenes in the trailer. And I understand it's trailers, but still, there's half a dozen scenes in that trailer that don't make it into this movie. That there's a few seconds in the trailer scene where there's an actual choreographed thing, to where I thought maybe they were going to take a Bollywood type angle with it, because it looked awesome. Like that angle, that shot, that little sequence is not in the movie. The shot where Monica Rambeau gets teleported to the moon and fights some Kree soldiers before she switches with Captain Marvel, not in the movie. They trimmed this down because they had complaints from people, one, talking about, oh, these Marvel movies are too long. Second of all, you get the comedy in there because you had so many fanboys going, I don't like Captain Marvel because she's so stoic and she's humorless in that. So you get part of that in there.
Yeah.
Now, what you also have in here, though, is people trying to do, and I'm going to invoke his name, and not just because he's now doing DC stuff, okay? What James Gunn did establish, and what I really liked, and what they carried over with Taika Waititi's Ragnarok, is that the Earth is the dark shit, is the serious heavy shit, to where, yes, you have some humor and stuff, but it's a lot of heavy stuff. The cosmos stuff has a bit more humor worked into it. One thing James Gunn and Taika Waititi did with the Ragnarok, which is what I thought they were going to do, is kind of have that separation where you have your cosmic storylines, which have a little bit more goofiness to them. They still have the serious Marvel stories in it, but that area, you play it a little bit lighter so you can sell some of the ridiculousness of a see-through alien or whatnot. You know, what they tried to do in Quantumania, you know, whereas the Earth stuff is Civil War, Winter Soldier, the serious war, you know, that stuff going on, whereas the cosmos at least had a little bit lighter stuff to it. And they're trying to do that here. And I will fully agree with you on it. They are trying to do what James Gunn and what Taika did with the first Ragnarok. They're trying to continue that, but not quite getting there with a lot of the material. You could see the attempt in there, but there too, I think there's stuff that answers a number of these holes and these questions that you have, Ian, that were cut out because of runtime, because they were trying to whittle this down and make it a breezy, lighter. And so they keep some of this stuff in and not explain it, because there's an editing issue. And again, I really had no problems with most of the editing until the third act-ish and a couple other spots. Like when the Marvels meet up with our big baddie the first time, from there on, sort of outside of the sequence of them saving the Skrulls, the the placement of the scenes is odd, because especially noticing it the second time, and bear with me, I'm sorry, I try not to talk too much longer.
I'm following you. Go ahead. Know.
But in the scene when the Marvels show up, you've got Rambo and you've got Kamala Khan sitting there on the deck going, holy crap, we're here with the front bad guy. They're talking about the bangle. Okay. When she raises her hands up, Kamala Khan, she's holding the sleeve of her wrist to cover her bangle. Okay. Then they show the sequence where they're talking about the bangle. They show the bangle. She notices it. And then they cut to a scene with her covering up the bangle. I think that sequence got cut incorrectly. I think what it was supposed to play out is that Kamala sees it first. She covers the bangle. Then they put their hands up before you even get a discussion. And then at the end, you have the disappearing, reappearing bangle on Ms. Marvel's wrist. But there's no explanation at all of what happens to that second bangle at all. It just evaporates. And in between there, I think there is a lot of sections in here that they either reordered or cut, if nothing else, for their runtime to try to make it more breezy and pacing. And I think it hurt the film. This one, and I hate saying that I need a longer film, but I would love to see what was on the cutting room floor, because I think, while I'm not saying it would patch everything, whatever's on the floor, I think it would bring more cohesion to some of the stuff that you've pointed out, Ian. Not everything, but some of the stuff.
Well,
I think it would.
It maybe, but from what I had heard, there was it was a little while ago, but I think it was Kevin Feige, one of the other Marvel execs, had watched the original cut of the film. There have been a few of them, because I keep trimming it back and back and back.
Right.
And the original cut was, the mandate was to edit it down to make it releasable. Now, that, you know, that's not a runtime thing. People will show up for long movies as long as they're good. Mm-hmm. And as long as they're in continuity with what they expect. And they, you know, people don't, they didn't expect, well, maybe they did expect this, and that's why they stayed away, because this, the other fault of Disney Plus is this is going to be on Disney Plus probably by Christmas, maybe by New Year's.
Nah, people expected it. There was already buzz the minute they announced it. The minute they announced it,
no.
MCU, no one was looking forward to it on of the fan base that they were talking about. Everybody rolled their eyes.
I know. But everyone that thing. I saw. Here's the thing, Mark. It is up to Disney to understand their audience.
Well, yeah.
I hate to say it, but to subvert the expectations by delivering something that they will show up for.
Sure.
Now, there's a notion that all the people who hate this movie are sexist, misogynist trolls. But the thing is, they love female characters, because you can go through the litany of classic strong female characters from Ellen Ripley to Sarah Connor and on and on and on. Those movies have a huge fan base, and those are there's a large crossover between them and comic book heroes, right? So when they see something like this, which is pandering to an audience that neither buys comics nor, as based on this weekend, shows up for the movies, then they're like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you wasting $376 million in production costs alone to give us this?
We know that now, from our show we've done together, because they can.
And I will argue,
they could. This is not going to happen going forward, because if they want to see the
X-Men
make it to the big screen, there's going to be some huge cuts. And, you know,
out of those two examples you gave for the strong female character, I will push back, though, and say that at least one of them was made masculine in order to be badass.
That is not true. She became the soldier that she needed to be, but she retained her femininity, as was evidenced by the end of Terminator, when she's Terminator 2, when she's talking about the future and John Connor. I think it was the scene with Dyson. There's all sorts of motherly feminine energy in that movie that is not, you cannot compare Sarah Connor to Carol Danvers.
No, I wouldn't. I wasn't going to say that. I'm just saying.
But I'm with Mark. They butcher up for a three quarters of the movie.
They did but the thing is, they did not take the shortcut. They didn't just say, look, she's a waitress in one movie, and now she's Rambo in the other movie.
Right.
There's a progression of that character.
I understand what she's
been doing.
Mm-hmm. I grant that.
Okay, so we're gonna catch up on some comments. Thanks for David for leaving that in the private chat to say, hey, we got people talking to us.
Yeah, quit your yapping.
Let's see what this means. Like probably 40 minutes out of context. It's a pepperoni time from Vito. Vito also says Ms. Marvel needed an arc. Carol accepts her immediately. There's almost no learning from the seasoned mentor. I would agree with that as well. Carol actually apologizes for teaching her you can't save everyone.
I would
too. See.
Yeah,
I would too.
I mean,
that's well,
I've got kids. I've already apologized to my kids a couple of times.
Twice when today.
They, yeah. When they had high expectations and I had to use the. Yeah, that's.
I mean, it's kind of true. You can't save everybody.
No, that's well, why.
I wish you could.
But no, here's the thing. We can't save everybody. Now, if you're going to have a superhero movie that where the lesson is you can't save everyone, then you need to go into that place of this girl who thinks that her hero can save everybody and wants to save everyone. Carol Danvers is when she's talking to Ms. Marvel in that evacuation scene, understandably, she's under duress and she's kind of like, you know, snippy. It's there's almost a callousness to it. It's like, you can't save everyone. It's not like we can't save everyone.
But now,
you know, she didn't seem too ripped up about it. Now, the other thing is, if you look back on superheroes of the past, it's always a big deal when they can't. And they always put themselves through trials and tribulations and get imaginative to save everyone. Let's go back to Superman 3.
Well, no, but
the chemical plant. Hold on. Plant fire. What's exploding. Superman's like, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get, you know, to save the people from this thing going nuclear or whatever, until he's like, wait a second. Is there a lake nearby? And he flies and he freezes. Like, where is that ingenuity in Captain Marvel? She's a space cop. She's been doing this stuff on weird planets with unspeakable bizarre alien creatures and environments for 30 years. And she can't figure out how to evacuate 100 people off of a planet.
Now you've met her limits. And she's done it twice in this movie where she couldn't save every Skrull. She couldn't save Monica. And
the whole Monica thing is nonsense too, because why didn't you come back for me? I'm like, you are a grown woman,
Monica,
and you don't understand that I've been a space cop.
No, but in Carol's eyes, we lost Monica at the end of this movie. She doesn't know she's hanging out with Kelsey Grammer and her mom.
No, she lost Monica because Monica was too stupid to figure out, hey, I can patch this hole from the one side from the other side. I know,
but if you're asking for an arc for Carol in terms of like, the hero that gets to the point of learning their limits and admitting to where they're at, you're there. You're there because we've lost some Skrulls. You're there because we lost.
No, but that's an end of the movie.
A little teenage girl from Jersey City. We lost her. We lost my goddaughter.
That's an end of the movie revelation. Okay, she reignites a son, and she can't, that's not progressing, Don.
Bullshit.
In the middle of the movie,
she is that she's there. You want a hero. You want this infallible curse. This rough.
No.
Hero,
no, I don't want someone
who's
infallible.
Girl to a place where I can't be badass and save everyone. We're there. You got her there.
The problem is she is the badass hero who doesn't have any real dimension or arc.
You're asking for something impossible. You're asking for a hero to save everyone like it's Superman 3. That's why that movie's looked at as bullshit, and that's why this movie is this movie's not great, but it's not going to be looked at as camp first. Because we still have an arc that gets to a place of we still have loss, we still have people, we still have a body count. You don't have that in Superman 3 because you're never going to have
that. The only reason
we've
got the loss here is because through sheer contrivance, as I just mentioned.
Welcome at the such is life.
No, it's not. It is such is an excuse for bad.
I wish I had my Frozen Lake factory ready to go. Shit, come on. I won't compare contrivances between Superman 3 and Captain Marvel as if they're the same.
I'm giving you a specific example.
Go back to Zack Snyder and you have a better chance. Come on. No.
I don't understand the point you're making here.
The point I'm making is that you're asking for this Carol Danvers character to live up to what she is apologizing for and or to reach a point where she has a place that she can understand that. And she does because she lost Skrulls and she does because she lost Monica by the totality of this movie. You're there. Now, will she ever get a Captain Marvel 3 to find out how that goes or character progression further? No, she probably won't, thanks to the box office of this movie. But if you're asking for a character arc that can rattle whatever cage we needed to rattle with Carol Danvers, you got one.
It's Carol Danvers not great, doesn't cover any consequences sure for her actions in these movies. She goes back and destroys the Supreme Intelligence.
And has consequences
as I,
movie.
As, well, here's the thing. As I mentioned, I'm talking about There are people that survived that massacre, and there was a civil war. This is an interplanetary species. At no point do they go to some, I don't know if there's an intergalactic governing body or shield to say, hey, look what Captain Marvel just did. She blew up the thing that was holding the fabric of our society together. Now she had a grudge and it was a quote unquote evil AI, but that was not her place to do it. This movie should have been the trial of Captain Marvel.
That'd be interesting, but the consequences are still there because she's got this pushback from the Kree. You've got consequences because she's been away from Earth and she missed out on her goddaughter.
They're all self-inflicted consequences, though.
And yet, you wanted a girl who has... You wanted a fallible hero from the perfect heroine.
No, I want a fallible hero that I can look at and say, I understand the mistakes you've made, but she keeps making bigger and bigger mistakes with world-destroying consequences.
What?
Now, this is something to investigate with, you know, Ms. Marvel saying, you know what? You are kind of fucked up because you keep doing these things and nobody's happy with you. It's probably better that you're, you know, out in the universe, or maybe you've spent too much time away from Earth. You've forgotten to be what it's like to be human.
All right.
All of these are valid things to explore. Instead, again, we get the singing planet. The last thing I'll say.
Oh, yeah,
the whole thing with the Flurkins. Here's the difference between whatever hacks wrote this movie. And look, I understand they were involved in the Disney shows, but the Disney shows, even Loki with all its goofiness, Loki and Ms. Marvel were essentially dramas with little bits of humor and absurdity splintered in. They weren't absurd as comedies. This is the wrong trio to write this movie. Here's the difference between what this movie did and what James Gunn would have done with the Flurkins. There is a sequence at the end where they've got to get off the Saber base or whatever, and they've got too many personnel and not enough lifeboat ships.
Yeah.
So they say, hey, these Flurkins it looks like they eat people, but they have these giant tentacles that absorb people and objects, and they kind of like store them inside and then they spit them up. So if we get enough people inside these cats, we can put them onto the ships and get away. Because they don't, you know, there's no like scientific like problem with the density or anything of these bodies and these cats.
They're a D&D bag of holding. Come on.
Well, yeah, right. And that's fine. That's fine. It's an interesting idea.
Closet cats.
Two problems. One, the shooting of that evacuation scene is alternately trying to be all like cutesy and fun. Isn't this so weird and gross? And everybody's running around getting eaten by cats. But then also there's the one technician. It's shot like a horror movie, where she's being stalked by this cat and she's cowering in fear. We, as the audience, know, oh, it's going to be fine. It's a cutesy cat thing. But to her, there's this giant monster that has been eating her friends. She doesn't know that they're being going to be regurgitated or anything. There's a weird announcement. They're like, don't be afraid of the cat. And before you let loose these things to go mop up your crew, you have an announcement saying, look, this is going to be strange, but we have these creatures we're about to unleash. It's totally safe. It's not going to hurt. Instead of literally having to herd cats because you haven't communicated anything to anyone. Now, here's the difference between how these hacks handle it and how James Gunn would have handled it. What's it like in the belly of a Flurkin? Wouldn't it be weird if you're hanging out in like some kind of a weird Beetlejuice
like
waiting room lounge?
A
pocket universe or lounging around the stomach, like floating on like whatever refuse and say, hey, isn't this strange? But instead, no, we're just like, and then when they get spit up, everybody's completely dry. There's no like weird like food particles or even slime. They come out completely dry.
There is slime, but it's CGI. So
correct.
It's like it's much like the power swapping. It's inconsistent because there are scenes where they come out of these cats and there's not a speck of like grime or slime on them. Because my wife was like, shouldn't they be like gooey? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long way down the checklist for me.
There's a lot missing in this movie. I mean, there could have been a scene where Kamala Khan's mother demanded to Fury, I need to go with you because my daughter's up there somewhere. That would explain why he brought her up to space station.
There could have been
a scene at the end of the movie where Fury goes to Kamala and is like, hey, you got a lot of promise. I know a bunch of other young heroes your age, and I think you would be a great leader.
And by the time those movies come out, none of the actors are going to be playing those characters.
Yes. We're a long way out.
And that's the thing about 28 years old playing. And that's the thing about Hank McCoy, Beast. It's like, I can't get excited for that because I have no idea when that's happening.
Yeah. Wait, it's so many years away right now. Yeah. Which is why I hope Deadpool 3 blows it up.
I think Kelsey Grammer being in this movie is, or the end credits of this movie, is the equivalent of John Krasinski showing up as Reed Richards.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know if that's going to be the, if he's going to be the Beast, you know, or the Beast of, I mean, that's a Beast of one alternate dimension. We don't know what dimension they're going to use for the X-Men. So
the multiverse has been a bad idea the whole time.
Well, it at the very least, because I was disappointed in that too, but at the very least, I feel like that shows that at some point in time, Marvel still listened to the fan base and the online chatter, because there was so much speculation of wouldn't it be cool if John Krasinski and Emily Blunt were Mr. and Mrs. Fantastic. So they do a little bit of a threat because they realize that they're going to do their Fox X-Men. And by the time it comes out, to your point, there's no way those actors are going to play those characters. But wouldn't it be kind of cheeky if we put the fan favorite John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, put him in a movie for 5 terrible minutes as Mr. Fantastic? Yeah. You know, I appreciate that, even if I don't appreciate the results.
The same way it'd be cheeky if Nick Cage showed up in the Flash movie.
Oh boy, invoke it.
It would have been if they hadn't done the CGI Nick Cage. I was all about it until I'm like, what did they do? Yeah. All right.
But you know, that's how they do it. It's like all of these end credit scenes lately, you had Star Fox, Black Knight, Clea, and now this. Let's be honest, they're only gonna show up as cameos in Secret War. That's it.
If that.
Yeah. Maybe Clea will show up in Doctor Strange 3. Yeah. We don't know. But it's just it used to actually tease. Like, remember when the tease was the hammer that dropped in New Mexico?
That was automatically the next movie.
Okay. Right. Wow, that's the next movie.
Yeah.
No, this is we're teasing this, and if you respond well to it, then we'll add it into some movie in the future.
Yeah. That is one thing of the course that it needs correcting. Like, the threads need to be tighter. The oversaturation is real because we have loose ends in several movies that are now years apart.
Oh yeah,
we have a fucking eternal frozen hand coming out of it.
Say that.
We're still hanging out of the core of the earth.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned Eternals, because this movie made me appreciate Eternals even more. Because
I'm learning to appreciate Eternals every time we watch Eternals
is like the Andor of Star Wars, where it actually has real locations.
Yeah.
This movie, I felt like it was green screen delight. Yeah. Like, even in the trailers, when I saw the heroic trio battle Darben, I was like, even in the trailer, guys, I was like,
This is Ant-Man again. Yeah,
really green screeny. Not as crazy as Quantumania, but it's like this felt like it was really on a studio. It's like, what happened to locations? Yeah. You know, it's
foreground sets at best. Yeah,
you know, like
they probably could have saved a lot of money by shooting in actual places. Defender of the Eternals. That was one of the last. You know, I don't think it's the best, but I like that it swung for the fences in a completely different direction.
Right.
I'm not going to be mad if they don't revisit those characters in the future, but I would like to see someone do something with that damned Eternals head that's sticking out of the air. All right. So we got a few
Black
comments.
Earth wrap it up. And the night, Black Knight. Like, we're years apart now. It's getting ugly.
All right. Swindle. Hey. I like that. I don't know what that refers to.
Because again, we're behind. Twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Fantastic can't stretch that much. Mr. Krasinski, and you can breathe in there. Sure, totally clean. Oh my gosh, cat's breath is bad enough, but imagine being inside a Flurkin.
But in terms of like the coherence of the movie, like we're in terms of what Mark is saying about the editing, where they're trying to get this to be a tighter moving movie, you're not going to spend 7 minutes in the cat's stomach. You know, that's the first.
I'm not saying 7 minutes. I'm saying a quick cut of like what's going on in there.
Oh,
you would have James Gunn. Here's the thing is in all honesty, and this will sound weird, and it's no,
I hope so.
It's no slight on Nina DaCosta's, cause I like her. I enjoy her work quite a bit. I would have been interested to see how James Gunn handled this, because as far as a script, possibly, even if he's not writing the script, because one, you would have got the cats still with the Flurkins, and yes, Ian, you would have got your scene with, heck, even either Mantis or somebody sitting in the in you know, or Drax accidentally gets sucked into one of the Flurkins, and you get to see the inside, even if it's not for the permanent solution, you happen earlier in the film, so you at least establish what happens when you get in the Flurkin. Also,
so
you
it's
would
like
have
Drax with the knives.
Yeah, you would have a needle drop, and it would not be memory. It would not be from Cats. It would be what's new, Pussycat. Whoa! From you know, it would have been Tom Jones needle drop there.
Can we say pussy in a Marvel movie?
Can say pussy cat.
Here we go.
But Mark, you just hit on something really great there. Like, what if one of the other, like, what if one of the Guardians was just inside one of the Flurkins? Because the last we saw them were kind of going their separate ways, and like, Drax getting going like, I didn't get very far
in there. That'd be great.
Well, it's they are doing what DC was doing while Marvel was at its peak. They are scrambling. They're trying to rush things. They're trying to piece together something to try to strike the lightning that they had in the first 10 years of, even as a DC fan, just as a movie fan, that was solid. I loved that. They needed to stop.
Yep. Or give it 5 years or do something.
If you want a retcon, screw the multiverse. Have Doctor Strange's spell at No Way Home. Mm-hmm. At the end of the third film, have his spell not only have wiped the memory of everybody on who Spider-Man was, but have it screw with people's memories. So they're trying to figure out, why is this thing sticking out of the ocean, this big structure?
Or, oh my gosh, you know, right?
But some kind of reset, because what you've run into with the combined universe is you have so many questions. Okay, you've got what's her name going around sucking up everything. Where are the Guardians? It's just like you're on Earth. There's this major catastrophe thing going on Earth. Where are the rest of the superheroes?
Yeah.
Because they lost focus on what made that first 10 years so wonderful. You started the term here earlier, street level. Mm-hmm. You started at street level problems to where it was in the contained, to where the other heroes would go, they probably have got that. I've got my own problems. Mm-hmm. It wasn't super cosmic, epic, global.
Yeah.
It's the problem that I had with Davies with the Doctor Who series as it went on. Davies went from these smaller problems that explain things of why not everybody might know everything, that there's aliens or whatnot, to these epic galactic every time thing that's going to destroy the time space continuum, to where he felt like he had to go on the global scale all the time, whereas Doctor always usually had sometimes those adventures, but a lot of times had the street level smaller adventures going on. And that's what made these Marvel films pick up, is you started with the small things and you built up to a big global thing that explains why you have all the heroes involved. But
no one has figured out how to be big and come back down. A Batman movie couldn't do it. A Superman movie couldn't do it. X-Men movies haven't done it. No one's figured that out cinematically at all ever yet.
Well, I think
Fast and Furious can't do it. Mission Impossible can't do it.
Here's the thing. They haven't done it. I mean, you're talking about comic books that go back 80 years and tremendously creative people who are still working in the industry. There are people out there who can crack this. Unfortunately,
do it. I just haven't seen it in a movie. Yeah,
it's true. And that's the point. Is like we're getting to the point now where I think if this is going to survive, they really need to dig deep and come up with something that's going to capture the imagination again. But
if they pivot from Kang to the Doctor Doom we're all hoping for, Doctor Doom is an earthbound thing more than Kane, and that would be nice.
Yeah, you know? I'm kind of buried the lead. I'm probably going to watch these movies, but it's 50-50 because I'm kind of done with the Marvel Universe. I don't really care about DC anymore. Everything, I feel like I'm getting old. Like, this feels like a young man's genre and stories, I don't really give a shit about Doctor Doom or what he could do, because unless they get someone really special to write these things, not so much the direction, but it's the scripts and the characterization. I'm just going to be sitting here talking about the same disposable villain. Like, Doctor Doom is going to make it through one, maybe two movies and be replaced by some other, you know, big brand villain from those universes.
I mentioned this in my review. I don't understand why they can't DC or Marvel, why they can't Cole, the writers of the comics. Now, I know that Geoff Johns was a little bit involved in The Flash, but probably not enough. Yeah. And it wasn't... That's why I kind of have some hope with James Gunn starting fresh, but I don't know.
I don't know.
You either. Know, like you could have had Kelly Sue DeConnick or I forget the other Captain Marvel writer, you know, involved in either of these movies, you know, and I just don't understand it. You know, it's like it's same thing with the movie art, you know, the poster art. It's like, why can't you have the artist do the poster art for these comic book movies instead of Photoshop?
In-house hires.
Look at how many of those Photoshop, those later DC, those later Marvel looked like exactly the same. The multi-hands. They literally just same replaced rainbow. Elements. Stupid. They just literally replaced elements. They're like, okay, let's replace this element with this one. It's the same problem that DC have. Even as a DC fan, I fully recognize the works and everything, even though I enjoy those films. But what films I really love? The animated films of DC. Animated DC films, 9 times out of 10, not everyone, but they have a stronger track record than the live action. And live action is pretty much CG now. Why can't you get those writers to write those self-contained stories that are so good in the animated film? And they still do crossovers in the animated films. Yet for some reason, those stories are still a hell of a lot more solid than anything live action.
I agree with you, but just for me personally, and we're going to wrap this up because we're going way long. Yeah. Although Shenanigans did say, don't make them come out with Honey, I Shrunk the Guardians. I would love to see that. Rick Moranis as Drax. But the problem that I find, especially because they're constantly relaunching this shit. I don't want to see another Lex Luthor Superman movie. I don't want to see the same Rogues Gallery of Batman reinvented for the 90th time. But the problem is these studios know that most of the people who see this don't give a crap about that. They'll go see the 80th iteration of the Joker and Penguin. Whereas, you know, perhaps guys like us, I'm speaking for us, which, you know, I possibly shouldn't do. You know, we'll watch or we'll pick up a one-off of Batman solving a mystery involving a villain he's never faced before or a problem he's never faced before in the many iterations. I'm kind of done. And, you know, Marvel's maybe the nail in the coffin, ironically, when it's opening up the X-Men. And now I say I'll watch the Deadpool Wolverine 3, but that's going to be a farce. But yeah, I'm still reading comics. But
your heart's in the right place.
I'm done with these movies. Well, anyway, I heart all of you. This has been a wild adventure of a conversation.
Yeah. How do the kids do it?
They go here.
The kids and the Kens. Yeah. By the way, the whole argument, like, you know, why didn't? Well, I don't know. Barbie, which was very much a targeted at teen girls and older women, I guess. That made $1 billion+ at the box office.
Sure
and this movie, which was ideally targeted at the same demographic, failed to make an eighth? I can't do math, of that. So I'll just leave it there. Anyway, thank you guys, Earth's Mightiest Critics, for joining me, for hanging out. I love all of you despite our contentious bouts during this conversation. But we'll hug it out later over Zoom or something. But anyway, David Fowley. Reading GODS, a new Marvel crossover comic, I'm sure, of Keeping It Real. Don Shanahan of Film Obsessive. Every Movie Has a Lesson. The Cinephile Hissy Fit Podcast and too many other things to name. Remember, check back with Kicking the Seat tomorrow to watch us talk about a much better film than The Marvels. And I'm glad you admit that. Trolls 3, band together. Mark, the Movie Man Krawcheck of Special Mark Productions in the Spoiler Room. And me, Ian Simmons, for Kicking the Seat. Check everybody's stuff out down below. Links will be in the description. And also, if you've written stuff, reviews, I'll drop those there. I'll even throw in a link to Vito's review of The Marvels because that guy's awesome. But anyway, thanks, everybody. Have a great night. Like and subscribe and all that good stuff. Support us until next time, which will be next Wednesday. We're going to be back here talking about Thanksgiving. Whoever wants to show up for an early Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh Lord.
It won't be sorry. I'm a horror pussy. I'm sorry. Won't be
a horror pussy. That sounds like its own horror movie. But anyway.
Directed by
Actually, it's called Teeth. No. You should see it.
I still have to see that. I don't know if I
see David's looking. I'm like, nope, I already know. Yeah. Nope. No, your streets anyway. Is done. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for watching, and take care.